This is episode 83 of the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops with Benjamin Nyland. In this episode, we talk about everything from Microsoft Ignite, Office 365 groups, SharePoint migration, and more. You can support this podcast by purchasing guides from www.ciaops.com/publications. You will find a range of information on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365. You'll also find templates there to use on your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Reseller options are also available. All of this can be downloaded immediately at www.ciaops.com/publications. Well, welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. My name is Robert Crane. Glad that you could listen in to us for this episode. Why it's so exciting for me is because I get to talk to a rock star of the SharePoint and now Office 365 world in Benjamin Nyland, better known for working with ShareGate. So again, have a look at ShareGate as a great SharePoint migration option. Benjamin's got a huge amount of knowledge, blogs regularly, speaks regularly, is one of the best presenters that I have seen. So highly recommend all his work. And again, great to have him on board for this episode. We also have some news about stuff that's been happening in the cloud. Obviously, the Microsoft Ignite conference has wound up recently, and there's a whole swag of news available from that. All the sessions are online and available for you to watch on demand via the MSDN Channel 9 area, and I'll put the link up to that in the show notes. But it's going to take a while for me to work through all these, but some of the best ones that I've seen, or some of the ones that are really worthwhile looking at, I believe, is some of the stuff around the new OneDrive Sync client. So we've got news that there will be a new integrated or completely new client available for preview in September, with the final release due before the end of year. So this is great news. This is really going to, I think, make OneDrive and SharePoint a great tool and allow people to sort of use it the way they think that they should be using it, basically synchronizing lots and lots of data to the desktop. Obviously not best practice, but the Sync client, as I mentioned in this interview with Benjamin, is probably the weakest component at the moment of Office 365, and resolving that is really going to lift the product, I think, dramatically for a lot of people, especially small businesses. So again, I'll link to that in the show notes. Take a look at that, but great news on the OneDrive Sync client. Some of the other stuff that has come out recently is that Microsoft has now put into preview with the ability to do data import. So this means that you can upload your PST files and ship those PST files, that are even larger, on a data disk to Microsoft, and they will then get them into the servers in the data centers, and you can upload them into Office 365. The more exciting news is that we expect to see the ability to do data uploads directly from files and folders into SharePoint and OneDrive for Business. So that's really going to make it easy to do the migration of data from on-premise into the cloud. So again, notes for that will be in posted up on this episode, so have a look at those. Some of the other interesting things is that the mobile device management component of Azure Premium has now made its way into Office 365. So most clients now should be seeing mobile devices on their admin portal, which means that they can now configure and push out policies for mobile devices. And again, I have an article on my blog about what's coming, how to do that, how to set that up. Another interesting option is that offline Azure backup is now being surfaced. This means again that you can run a backup of your data, take it offline onto a USB drive, ship that USB drive to Microsoft. They will then put it into the Azure data centers, and you can upload that and seed that as your initial backup for your Azure backup. So again, another great option, making it easy to get started with the Azure in the cloud. One of the other things that I've noticed with all the presentations that I've seen so far when it comes to Office 365 is now the importance of Delve and the Office 365 group. So if you haven't looked at those, my strongest advice is go and have a look at Delve and the Office 365 groups and what they can offer, what they can do, because these certainly seem to be the technologies that Microsoft is focusing on. Now, if you want to keep up to date even more with what's going on in the cloud, I highly recommend my Cloud Business Community, which you'll find over at cloudbusinessblueprint.com. You can certainly sign up for our free email newsletter, but I would also encourage you to go to the top right-hand corner, select to join us, and become a community member to get access to our forums, our white papers, our on-demand training, all the benefits we provide the reseller community who are focused on advancing themselves in the cloud. So again, take a look at that. Always looking for more guests, more presenters, anything that I can get, obviously, to provide content for the listeners. So if you've got any suggestions or you know someone who'd be interested in coming on, please let me know. Contact me via email at director@CIAOps or on the Twitter at director@CIA. You can also connect with me using Skype for Business. My Skype for Business address is admin@CIAOps365.com. Don't forget the iTunes reviews. Really good to see people putting in reviews there, letting me know how the podcast is going, if it's hitting the points that they want. And again, all feedback is welcome. Remember that I'm always open for some input. You can do that if you want via a web form. You'll find that at www.ciaops.com/contact. And I think with that, it's time to get into this episode. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and I'm joined by Benjamin Nyland. Benjamin, welcome.
Good. Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, what we always do here on the Need to Know podcast is we get our guests to introduce themselves. So I'll let Benjamin do all that. I'm sure that we could I could go on with many superlatives, but let's start with Benjamin introducing himself to everybody first.
Sure, sounds good. Well, I'm Benjamin Nyland. I was going to say SharePoint MVP. I switched to Office 365 MVP. Obviously, a lot of things are headed that way. And I work in Montreal. I am French. I hope the accent's not going to shine through. But essentially, I work in Montreal, a company called ShareGate, a migration and management tool. And I guess my role there is a bit of a product evangelism, though I hate that title because there's a lot more to it than that. But essentially, what I try to do is get that known by helping people in SharePoint and Office 365 and now evolving, obviously. So I try to say at all times product agnostic, of course.
No, I think, again, if anybody hasn't had a chance to have a look at the ShareGate product, it is fantastic. Used it for many years. Highly recommend it. Awesome. And Benjamin tends to jump up on my YouTube all the time telling me that ShareGate's the easiest migration drag and drop tool, and I certainly agree with that. So if you haven't, I'll put it in the show notes. Have a look at it. It is a great tool. Maybe we start off with just quickly is, as you mentioned, you've moved from being a SharePoint MVP to an Office 365 MVP. And that obviously transition has started to happen very quickly. What's your general feel on, you know, moving from a typical on-premise environment with maybe one product like SharePoint that you've been involved with, people have been involved with, or IT pros have been involved with, and now we're moving to the online world that Microsoft's favoring, and now we're looking at an environment where there are so many products now available through something like Office 365. I mean, what's your feeling on, you know, obviously moving in that direction and broadening your gaze, I suppose, and what the future may hold for an IT professional?
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, it's going to be a topic, especially for the coming year or so, as more and more people start moving to Office 365. But I think the key point is, though, in the past, we've often been comparing whether we should stay on-premises or go to the cloud. And I think that this year and the coming years with SharePoint 2016 and so on, I think Microsoft realized that not everyone necessarily is going to be moving to the cloud. A lot of things are going to stay on-premises, but there's certain things that you don't have the expertise to build on-prem, nor do you even want to. And obviously, I'm going to quickly jump to one of the things in Office 365 being the video portal. I mean, do you want to set up an entire video portal by yourself or in IT, depending on your company size and expertise, and, you know, the transcoding, the video players, the mobile experience, the low bandwidth, high bandwidth, or do you want to just, you know, pay whatever dollars per month and get that in conjunction with your on-premises, because I understand that in different parts of the world and different organizations, depending on legal considerations, might want to stay on-prem. So it's going to be a very big challenge, I think. There's a lot of fear in the air, of course, around security, around job security, even for some, even though the role of IT pro is still there. If, in fact, if I could say the IT pro role is going to be even bigger, because now it's not just in charge of technology. It's a lot in terms of change management, to be honest. So if anything, it's going to grow. But I think this is definitely going to be an interesting year. Now, I'm lucky enough to be in this and dipping my hands in this Office 365 stuff all the time. But it's tough, and myself included. It's been very tough to see, well, should I be doing this on SharePoint? Should I even switch from SharePoint Server MVP in my situation to Office 365? And yeah, I'm very excited to see what's going on there. And the more I look at it, the more things make sense. And before I start talking too much, I just want to tell you about a story that's happened to me more than once, but one in particular here in Montreal. And I was talking with this very large customer. I mean, large customer could mean different things to different people, but and at least in Canada here, they're relatively large. They take care of energy through like heating, electricity, and so on and so on. And I was talking with CIO, and we were looking at SharePoint on-prem and strictly SharePoint on-prem. And then after a couple of meetings, we realized that a lot of people in the organization, talking a couple thousands of people, are actually bypassing IT. It's a problem called the rogue IT. And what rogue IT is essentially is people in the organization are long gone. They left IT somewhere in the year 2000 something, and they're already using things like Salesforce. They're using Dropbox. They're using WeTransfer.com. They're using Wistia.com for videos. They're already using free services, or they're using freemium services, or they just find some kind of solution somewhere else. And so what was interesting is that now we were not forced, but Office 365 made a lot of sense for us to work with our on-prem environment so that we could give an alternative to our business users that needed to, and we'll talk about groups today, but that will be able to create a group quickly and do it on themselves on their own accordance. So they don't have to wait for IT to go build a team site, add the content types. And though we still need to do this in some enterprise content management sort of way, but when we just need a place to work quickly and get stuff done and chat a little bit about it and get a meeting going, I find the consumable approach, or what they call in Office 365 experiences, is something that if we want to stay in our industry, in our changing world, especially the IT pros that are looking at Office 365 as if it's kind of an enemy, I can totally understand. But at the same time, it's Office 365 that's going to help them keep their business users in that Microsoft ecosystem and bring those management features in the long run. Now, of course, a lot of things are still just being developed right now, but there's a lot of things headed. So I know, I'm sorry, I talked too much, but I hope that covered the question a little
No,
bit.
I think it's good to get that sort of that sort of opinion, and again, obviously the passion for the product comes across, which is which is a great thing. And I think the opportunities there before, you were generally maybe stuck in one area just doing SharePoint. Now, typically in the smaller space, you have so many opportunities around the groups, around the SharePoint. You've got Delve coming through.
That's right.
So there's just so many more opportunities for IT pros to, expand their gaze. And again, the trick probably is you can't do it all, but again, there are certainly areas in this that you can move if you wish to grow. So, if you want to get away from just, putting bits together in a server or just, running up ISOs, Office 365, I think, is going to give you that, combined with something like Azure, really opens up your world. But again, you're going to have to obviously step up to the mark and learn this sort of stuff. I think the big change for a lot of IT pros is just the rapid change that's now taking place in this product, which is probably something we've never seen before.
Absolutely.
Daily, weekly, it's all changing. And you've just come back from the Microsoft Ignite, big Microsoft Ignite conference, with, all the information there. What was your experience with that? I mean, how did that conference compare to other things like the SharePoint conference or whatever? And what was the feel there?
Well, actually, yeah, very interesting point. Ignite, it's a it's a big conference, and I think that's my main takeaway. It's big. There's a lot of people. It's interesting because, again, we were, and this is from my vendor perspective, and I hope it doesn't bother the talk too much, but it goes in the context where, we're a SharePoint migration management tool, but we're so used to, from SharePoint conferences, people not necessarily knowing us, but just knowing when we say migration that we mean SharePoint migration. And now we had people come up, it's like, well, what are you talking about? Email migration? You're talking about SQL Server? You're talking about project? I'm like, oh wow, yeah, it's true. We're at Ignite. We have all of these different individual products being brought together, kind of foreshadowing what's happening at Microsoft. I mean, we used to not laugh, but when Microsoft said, well, now it's one Microsoft, and that was, I think, the one Microsoft was a big brand for a while, but it's not gone. It's actually happening, and Ignite was that first time where they're showing us that it is one Microsoft and that the different products do talk to each other, and that obviously the Office 365 was the obvious main focus. The main takeaway is not so much that we've seen some new things in Office 365, and I mean, we'll talk about that here, but it was more to see how what the vision of Microsoft, I think that was. What made me happy about this conference, obviously, as an MVP, we often get access to the bits before. So I didn't see, in terms of product, necessarily anything majorly new. And some of the things were already published before, like the Delve People Experience, the video portal. All of these things have been available, but it's not everyone that has the time to look at all of these things. But for me personally, and for us, or people that are listening that share that enthusiasm, or you're passionate and you're always in the new stuff, the geeky stuff, the SharePoint, the Office 365, just looking at it all the time, I think what was really fun was to see the vision that Microsoft has for everything put together, and obviously talking to the product team, because literally, if I have a recommendation, I know it's far for folks in Australia to go to Ignite for a week, but the advantage were yes, the sessions, but yeah, they're online right away. But the real advantage is that every single person from the product team, from Bill Baer to Mark Cashman to and then people that are technically writing the code, were at the Microsoft stand all day long. It was never empty with no product team. It was always there. You could talk to them. You could ask them. They'll open up their laptop, show you something that they could. So that was really interesting.
Well, I think one of the things that I actually saw one of your tweets that got me really, really excited was the Selective Syncing OneDrive for Business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that was like when you started reading some of the announcements, especially coming out about OneDrive, and the work that Microsoft is putting in. And that's unfortunately, I think that's been one of their weakest products. But by the look of it, they're certainly addressing that. And that's really going to bring more and more people, I think, into the fold and make that product so much more usable from an end user's perspective. And that's really going to be a secret to overcoming a lot of resistance, I think, to the cloud. And the big thing it's going to give people is, once they are in the Microsoft ecosystem, is this integration. I think that's the real secret of the Microsoft sauce when it comes to the cloud. It's just this integration with all these products lighted up
Absolutely.
Now that it can be done. And I think that's a fantastic, opportunity. I mean, are you seeing that sort of thing with people who are adopting it? Are they seeing those sort of benefits maybe compared to some of the other competitors?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think you said it really well. I'm not even going to try to rephrase or OneDrive for Business, there's a lot of improvements, but yes, it is currently not the strongest product in the suite. And that is something they know. That is something they've been working on. I could probably share this now, but back when we were at the MVP Summit a couple of months back in November, we were all with our torches almost on the OneDrive for Business guys. And they're like, well, what's our first priority? And it was sync. What's our second priority? Sync. What's the third priority? Absolutely. So the OneDrive sync is, the thing they knew they had to fix, the thing they knew that needed changing. And, people out there, we got to. The thing about Office 365, the thing about our industry, actually, not just Microsoft, is that we got to realize that the people in the business are no longer, I don't know how to say the word, but they know about technology. They know how to use technology, and they know how to go get it. So that whole server setup solution, what they're looking for is Dropbox-like for files and sharing, and they're looking for kind of things like this. And until that OneDrive reaches back, which is the only kind of missing piece for some people, I think. And they've announced Q3 is going to have the new sync preview engine. They're going to be removing the 20,000 document limit for syncing. They're going to come out with the Mac sync, which is already available. And then finally, the selective sync that allows you to sync by folder, so you only sync what you need. And that tied in, I think it's also very important not to see OneDrive for Business as a as that My Site or the My Documents only, because it's growing to become much, much more than that into a brand. And what it is every Office 365 experience, whether it's groups, whether it's going to be the new microsites, whether it's going to be the new blog post system that they showed, all leverages OneDrive, the brand OneDrive for Business, but it's not actually that My Site. The files don't go in your personal library. OneDrive means files now. It just means that there's files associated to this group, which we'll talk about. And the reason for this is that for the regular business users, we don't want to bother them on some level with SharePoint technicalities. We just want them to put files, right? It's going to be, we're going to talk about groups, but it's going to be depending on the usage scenario. So, I mean, we'll talk about it, but the idea is to compare to the competitors. And once again, I mean, you've said it all, is definitely the fact that Microsoft has that ecosystem. It's what was strong before. You would use Exchange with your Outlook. It had Word. Then you would use SharePoint, and you would use these other products, and it, you know, System Center. Everything worked well together. But now we're in a new web era where everything is on the web, and that's what Office 365 is delivering, in my opinion.
So I think also too, one of the, I suppose, you know, you get the good, or you get the challenging part of it as well. And I think the moment that what is a lot of a challenge for many people is, where do I put my information? So what we've had recently introduced is this concept of the Office 365 groups, which I suppose the best way I can describe it is sort of a intersection of a email distribution group and a basic SharePoint site. But it seems that Microsoft have some greater plans for the groups to be rolling out
Oh,
across the
yeah.
whole situation. So now you've sort of got to say, okay, do I now have to change my focus slightly and come to understand these Office 365 groups and what they're going to do and the role they play versus a SharePoint team site, a full SharePoint team site versus OneDrive for Business versus email? I mean, what's your sort of take on that sort of direction and the importance that, you know, the Office 365 groups are going to have?
Oh boy. Yeah, no, this is a big one, and it's really funny because today multiple times I've been asked, "So, what is groups and when do I use it?" It's actually come up literally two or three times today, both within our own company here at ShareGate and during a Yam Jam with Bill Baer on SharePoint 2016. And I completely understand there's a lot of confusion. So, there's something that is 100% clear. Everyone needs to start keeping an eye on groups. This is where they're going to be leading collaboration experience and possibly more in the future. It's about teams working together. Now, I'll expand on that in just a few seconds. So you said it pretty well, kind of like a exchange distribution list. I'm going to go into a and kind of describe it for those of them that are listening that haven't really experienced groups before. It's relatively simple. When you create a group, it's actually a sort of an entity in Active Directory, but it's only available in Azure Active Directory. And this is what's used for your Office 365. When you create a user in Office 365, there's actually an Active Directory that's associated to your tenant. We call that Azure Active Directory. And in there's a new type, just like you used to create users or security groups or computers. Now there's something called a Office 365 groups. I'm not sure exactly what their technical term for it. And everything is going to be associated to that. That's why it's only on Office 365. Now, what it brings together is a couple of things from Exchange and a couple of things from SharePoint. And what it does right now, because that's evolving, we'll talk about what was announced at Ignite, but essentially you have conversations happening. And this is essentially just emails. Right, so when you go into your group that has been created, you'll be able to exchange emails in an email format, but they call them conversations. So it's kind of like a group chat, but it's not really a live chat like you would have with Skype or Skype for Business or whatever. It's really a bunch of emails so you can follow through. What's fun is that also that group, it can be mail enabled. So let's say I have a group called, I don't know, support, or a group called marketing, and I want people from outside our organization to send us an email to that group, and everyone that is member of the group to see it will be able to do that, of course. So you have that part of group. Then group also takes the Exchange calendar, which is the best calendar in my opinion, compared to the, the somewhat okay SharePoint calendar. You get the Outlook calendar, but it belongs to the group itself. So instead of a calendar shared by people who are using Jenny's calendar to host the events, and instead of doing all of that, you have a group calendar and people are invited. You do your meetings. The benefit from that is somebody joins the company tomorrow, they also automatically join that group, and all of the meetings are already set. He's a member of these meetings. So definitely huge advantage of it being an Exchange group, an Exchange calendar. Sorry about that. Then the other thing that you get, and this is okay, well, you get a OneNote notebook. So the group gets a OneNote notebook as well, and so on. But then what you get is something called files. And this is where it starts becoming complicated, because now we're like, is it supposed to be like a team site? And so let me get to that in just a few seconds. So you get files. What the button files does is actually leverages SharePoint. And so it creates a hidden site collection that you cannot see. In your Office 365 tenant, sorry. And in there, what they do is when you click on files, it redirects an individual user to their OneDrive for Business, but not their OneDrive for Business personal document library, to their OneDrive for Business in a section that shows all of the groups that they belong to and the files that belong to each group. So again, going with the notion that we don't want to have to put the word SharePoint out there. In fact, the main tip that we've been giving our customers for a year now or more now is don't call it SharePoint, right? We've been saying that already. So now they're doing it the same with files in Office 365, it being called OneDrive for that business. So when you create a group, you get these conversations. In the future, you'll get the Yammer group joined with that Office 365 group. You'll get a calendar that's actually an Exchange calendar. You get a OneNote notebook that's OneNote, and you actually get an OneDrive for Business, which is actually a SharePoint document library in a real team site. So what's the difference between a team site and a group that seamlessly offers all of these same solutions, or it seems like it? And then we've saw in the future that Delve is going to join in and provide an entire profile to the actual group, showing the activity from all the different places. What is the difference? Well, I'll try to put it in a simple way that I can. The team site is actually the heavy duty ECM, or enterprise content management solution. Right? When you set up a team site, you don't take it lightly. You think about that. You do an architecture. You think about the team site. How many document libraries? One, two, three, four. How many columns? How many content types? Which content types? Are we using reusable content types? Are we doing retention policies on all that? Is that going to include workflows? Is that going to include, whatever you want to add? That seems more of a complex collaboration solution, if I can call it that. The groups for Office 365 is for all those times where you told yourself, man, this team site is a little bit overkill for what we need to do in our group, in our team. We just want a place to share our files, which is, in all honesty, when we look at the stats, most people have been using team sites to just dump their files in there, and they wanted some task and so on and so on. They wanted that collaboration experience that, frankly, the team site was used for, even though it was overkill, it was too much in there. So that what groups offers is a way for people in your organization to create groups by themselves. You don't need IT to create groups. Anyone can create themselves a new group. For example, I work here at ShareGate by writing a lot of blogs. So I've created a group called Blogs. I added people, content publishers in that group. I've added the designers that help me with the images. I added different people that need to help me in the blogs. And we get our conversations. We've got a calendar from Exchange that allows us to see when each blog is going to be published. And then we've got a OneNote notebook where everybody can add ideas of blogs that we could be writing on. And then we've got the OneDrive, which is actually a regular SharePoint document library, but my colleagues here don't care about necessarily the word SharePoint or me training them on SharePoint. They just want a place where the files are, where they can see the blog posts and get them or dump some images for me and get running, right? And so that is what Groups is about, is providing an easy to consume self-service team collaboration experience. I know there's a lot of buzzwords in there, but that's how I could compare it without talking about the new things that are obviously coming. That's the keynote did not even speak about SharePoint at Ignite. All it did was talk about Windows 10 and, of course, Groups and Delve. And that is definitely where they're headed with everything. So, yeah.
So is this going to create, you know, a bit of a, again, a bit of an inverted commas challenge? Because one of the, I suppose, the challenging things about SharePoint is if you allowed users, you gave them the freedom to collaborate and create subsites, create their own document libraries, build their own structure, generally it ended up in a mess. Now, we're now basically taking an email tool, which for most people is generally in a mess. Their inbox is overflowing. They've got messages everywhere and they never get to them. Now we're sort of adding an infinite amount of space with a OneDrive with an infinite amount of emails that a user can create on the fly for no apparent reason in a group. Are we potentially getting into a situation where we're going to have lots and lots of groups which may end up being orphaned and are just created on a whim and not thought about because they are so easy? I mean, is that, you know, a potential?
And that's why the IT pro lives on. It just evolves. And what happens is, absolutely, I mean, people will be people. You can give them whatever. And there's going to be people that don't use it properly, haven't been trained or understand what's going on. And that's perfectly reasonable. And that's why groups, for example, you can control through a PowerShell or mailbox policy, essentially, who is allowed to create the groups. If that's something that you fear, for example, and we know that more and more management features are getting added. And of course, you'll have to be able to monitor them and you'll have to be able to see which one has been created and should it been used. And groups within the group is not just about the email conversation. Frankly, the conversation piece is what I've been using the least so far with groups, because we have Yammer and we have Skype for Business for those conversations that need to happen. But it allows the business or the teams and the projects that are happening to quickly turn around and use solutions that are available instead of going through IT and waiting and possibly getting something that they didn't want. However, it doesn't mean that there's suddenly no more management or change management or making sure that, you know, there's the right retention enforcement. Governance will always live no matter what the technology is. So that part of what we need to be doing in our organization, it just different now, just a little bit different. But before, just like we didn't want people to create document libraries everywhere, now we'll want to make sure they don't create groups everywhere, depending on the organization. In small organizations or smaller, where we're about 100 somewhat people here, we just let everyone create groups and we go from there, and obviously we'll adapt depending on what we see. And then in other larger organization, it may vary, but I think there's definitely the possibility to keep control on what's going on.
Well, I think part of it, obviously, is like you mentioned, is the IT does need to oversee this. The IT does need to, again, put some policies, some guidance, as they do with other things. And I mean, it's like a file share. You know, you give users a file share and they fill it up pretty quickly with stuff.
Exactly.
And again, you've just got to police that. But as you mentioned, this is the important opportunity for IT pros to get involved. And the first step, obviously, is learning all this stuff, understanding all this stuff, and working out what the best application is of these tools. So you can really go to an organization now with a real tool toolbox of options when it comes to collaboration and communication, and
That's
then
right.
basically sit down with them and say, you know, what works best, and develop a checklist to help them understand. And then the good thing is, if their needs change or adapt, you've got another tool that you could bring in that may solve that, you know, solve that issue for them. So again, I think it's a great opportunity, and it's a matter of looking at it as a glass half, you know, a glass, you know, half full sort of thing. Is what's the opportunity here that we can actually really use these for?
Yeah, if I have one tip, I mean, I don't know if there's only IT pros or who listens, it would be definitely look at the Office Graph. That is what is hidden behind the scenes. That's actually, I would say, even is Office 365. And Groups plus Delve is going to be that new combo that's going to be leading in the next year or so with what we've seen at Ignite. And I invite you to look at the sessions. There's a couple people that did recaps on those, but everything related to Groups, everything related to Delve, look at where it's headed and look at the Office Graph that's doing all of these actions, because every single thing that we'll be doing will be captured. Those signals will be captured by the Office Graph to be able to build apps or add-ins now, or solutions that will enhance that experience even more if you can't just add it over there. And again, it's not about on-premises versus, nobody right now is saying what you're going to be competing, whether either you use team sites or you use Groups. That is not the case. The thing is, as I was saying earlier, is people are literally bypassing IT right now. You know, this is not the first time that I hear people saying, oh, well, you know what, we have to use an FTP, but it works every now and then, so I'll just send it to you through Dropbox. I'll send you those files. You know, and this kind of things always happen. And what we want to do is we want to provide that alternative. And that's why the hybrid is becoming the more present solution for larger organization. And then for others, it might be to just go completely in Office 365, which makes most sense.
Yeah, and I think, again, the real trick to it, as we talked about initially, was the speed of change. So the group sort of, to an extent, sort of came out of nowhere. It's been a very relatively new feature. And it has moved the enablement back to the user side of the fence, which, again, produces its challenges. But as you say, it's something that the vast majority of users who are paying and using for the product need to use or want to use to make it simple for them. So I think, you know, that's what you've got to be aware of in this sort of product. There are so many of these sort of features. And as an IT pro, the opportunity is, when you talked about the control side, is the PowerShell, the advanced management, the compliance, putting all those sort of things in place. And the big advantage is, if you can do it for one tenant, then you can do it for multiple tenants, so you can then blow that across your customers. But the most important thing then is obviously, you know, keeping up to date with the information and getting there and using the product. I mean, what was sort of the feel from those that attended Ignite, and the general buzz around the whole, you know, the community thing that was happening obviously at the event? Is it all positive? Is all, you know, upswing? Is it all, you know, basically embracing these features?
Yeah, no, it was actually very positive, to be honest. I think, I mean, it depends what we're talking about. I think many people expected perhaps a little bit more around SharePoint 2016 on-premises. Now, luckily, there was a Yam Jam today where Bill Baer answered a lot of the questions, where they confirmed again that there will, you know, things about SharePoint Foundation won't exist in 2016, SharePoint Designer, possible some solutions. So I think towards the SharePoint 2016, a lot of people were happy about the infrastructure changes and all of that. But if we stick to the aspect of, you know, Office 365, which has been a lot of the talk as well, it was surprising to see that people were actually, oh, but you know, I'm actually going to take a look at this Groups a second time. And I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm all pro Office 365. Obviously, a lot of my work is in there, and therefore I like it quite a bit. But, you know, I'm on a Mac. I have an iPad. I have an iPhone. I use what I feel is best for me at all times. And Office 365 has been able to get me back into that Microsoft world a lot more, not because I like Microsoft, because it's actually provides me with some valuable solutions. And I think the general feel was a good one around both Groups and Delve in the state that they showed it, because I'm not going to lie to you, Right now, it's definitely very young. Groups are still missing some things that I would like to see. The compliance center that they showed still isn't in Office 365, but is imminent. We're all talking Q3, Q4, 2015 for most of these things. But what I'm very excited about, and I think what a lot of people got excited about at Ignite, was the state of groups plus Delve plus the new portals that are going to be the mature version of Office 365 in a few weeks and months. That was very exciting.
Okay, so we're drawing to an end. We're getting towards the end of our session here, and I want to make sure that we give Benjamin plenty of time to get away and do real work for the rest of his day. But one thing, what I might ask for you, just to change topics and give people some information based on obviously your experience in the ShareGate world and the SharePoint migration. Is it possible just to give us a bit of your best practices recommendations on how to approach migration of files and folders from on-premise to something like SharePoint? Now, obviously, ShareGate's going to allow us to do that, but have you got some
Just in
guidelines,
general.
just in general, how to do this? What's the best approach? How to approach it with customers? Because typically, customers have got a file share, lots of subfolders, maybe they've got some structure. Typically, most of them haven't. One of the biggest questions I see with IT pros is, okay, I don't really understand SharePoint to an extent. How do I actually go about doing this? What's the best practice of getting the information the client's using on a file server or file share into something like SharePoint, as a migration process?
Absolutely. This is another big one. But and I hope I'm not boring everyone with my long talks. I tend to talk a lot. But yes, in a migration space, first look and understand before you even do anything. You have to look and understand what it is that you're going to. And I can't stress that enough. And it's not, I'm not trying to put anyone down or anything, because a lot of people think they know SharePoint. And then I ask about, side columns, and I talk about content types, and they're like, well, what are you talking about there? But so it's very, very important that you understand properly SharePoint. Whether it's online, whether it's on premises, it doesn't really make a difference. You need to understand the impacts of the difference between a site collection, that things can be activated only here or there, that you cannot create this permissions based on metadata, and that you need to really understand. So proper training on the platform that you're going to, and what's available, and what can be done, and what cannot be done based on how you put things. Because there's so many times that I have been called at months or after the migration right away, where people want to do something, and I have to tell them, well, you can't do that in the way that you've set it up. Are you going to create a new site collection per project, or a new site per project, or a new list entry with different pages, search driven? There's lots and lots of possibilities. So first, make sure you understand where you're going, how it works. Take some training. If your training is a 1 day or a 3 day training, then it's definitely not enough. You've cut the corners. You'll need at least 5 days on intensive training if you don't know what SharePoint is, minimum. Once you get there and you experience, in terms of migrating from the file share, and a quick note, Microsoft just released a migration API literally last week at Ignite. So look into that as well for the migration speeds. Because if you're just trying to migrate your files into SharePoint, Office 365 in this case, it's going to be extremely slow. So the new migration API will allow you to go many, many gigs per hour. And that definitely solves some problems. But getting back to the migration process, the second thing that you want to do, without a doubt, is having an inventory of what you have. There's different tools out there that does inventories of your file shares, to be honest. And we've used some very simple one that barely costs anything. I think it's called Tree Size, but there's many other out there that allows you to see, what kind of files you have, what is the most files you have, do you have any duplicates based on their file name anywhere, do you have anything that's not been modified for since 1998? And I say that because I've seen it. Properly get all of that inventory. And what we've done is, from that inventory, we've split it into different teams. So in large migrations, what we've done is we've identified who the stakeholders are for different parts of the file shares. Because the IT, I mean, we're there to provide that that service, if I can call it that, in terms of technology. But the content itself, which one's important, which one should be tagged how, which one should be placed where, that's not so much what we can be good at. Depends on the organization, of course, but usually we're going to be saying, all right, here's the inventory. Here's how we identify it, how our things are split up. Here's the section called finance. I'm going to contact the power user, the person in the finance department that's going to be our champion for this role. I'm going to give them a couple of Excel files or whatever the case, depending on using tools or not. And I'm going to ask that person to go through all of this in terms of that inventory that we got, see if there's anything that's the same versions, because obviously people will do V1, V2, V4 in their file names and so on. People will have duplicates. Make sure that you have what you want to migrate to the destination. And then what's that? When that's done, the actual migration process of copying files, that's not the hard part. You get a tool and it'll bring it, right? Because the drag and drop solution, or you build your own tool, whatever the case, the migration itself is not the difficult part. The difficult part is to understand which files you're going to take, what metadata you're going to enrich them with. Is you going to add content types to it? Do you want to keep permissions the way that they used to be? What do you want to do to that data? So first, understand what SharePoint is. Second, make sure you have an inventory. Three, identify your champions in the organization or people that will take ownership and responsibility. Set up milestones. So you have to set that this by this date, I need this to be done. Otherwise, we're turning that portion of the file share in read-only. You know, I'm not saying use scare tactics all the time, but sorry about that. Unfortunately, that's what's often worked for us. We had a hard date, said, but this date, the file share is going to go read-only. We're going to identify this group. You are on this date. We're doing the migration based on the Excel that you're going to give us. Your group, by this date, we're going to do the migration, and it gets done. However, if you don't have support from your VPs or, you know, the people upstairs, if you don't have support from them, then you're not going to do any sort of good migration, unfortunately. I hope this helps a little bit. It's hard to talk about it, but obviously, if anybody wants to contact me, talk more, email, I'll be more than happy.
Yeah, so what you're telling us is we need to incorporate a nice big 4x2 piece of wood in our toolkit when it comes to SharePoint migrations. Is that correct?
You know, it's. I don't want to say that because I work at a tool, so it sounds like I would be selling something. The problem is that migrating from a file share to SharePoint, it's very difficult. First, you can't keep the created by, the modified dates, and all of that. If you find a way with custom code, you can, but then you have all of the, how are you going to merge the V1 and V4 and V5 and put it in the version history of SharePoint? How are you going to take the names of the folders to assign that as metadata of your documents as you migrate it based on rules? That's where it becomes a lot faster to use tools, whichever one you use, of course, but migration without a tool is a lot longer and a lot more complicated. And I mean, by all means, go explore. I obviously work at a tool, so it may sound a little biased.
That's fine. All right, so what we're going to do is round up. I'll get Benjamin to give us a bit of a wrap-up of what we've talked about. Probably what I'd ask him is if you can pick one session that you'd recommend that we all go and view online that we'll get the most out of, that'd be great. And just let us know, how we can get in contact with you, and if people want to, follow what you do and keep up to date, pass those details on. So let us know.
Absolutely. And again, thank you very much for inviting me. I really appreciate this. It's fun that we can do this from Montreal all the way to Australia. And I hope to come back again sometime very soon. So in terms of Ignite, honestly, it may sound bad, but I would say stick to the keynote. Everything was pretty much shown in the keynote or said in form of bullet points, and you can grasp quite a bit of what's going on through that specific keynote. And when I mean keynote, not just the main keynote, they had multiple keynotes. So then they had the SharePoint keynote and the productivity keynote, if I'm not mistaken. So look at the keynotes. The other session that's a must is, Actually, not the one called the SharePoint 2016 Evolution and Roadmap. I wasn't super thrilled about that session, to be honest with you. However, Bill Baer did another session called SharePoint 2016 for IT Pros, I think, if I'm not mistaken, or What's New for IT Pros in SharePoint 2016, and a lot, and I mean a lot of content has been touched for SharePoint 2016 there, whether it's looking at the new min roles, looking at the new configuration wizard, looking at what's going to be there, what they removed, what's going to be there, what's not going to be there, like the 5,000 view threshold being removed, and things like that. The other session, if you're interested in OneDrive for Business and kind of understand of what's happening, and then of course what's coming, or the roadmap of OneDrive for Business, is the session on OneDrive for Business, but particularly the one called by Ruben Krippner. If I said his name, probably he's actually from Australia, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
And that's correct. So you definitely want to support him there. But no, great session on OneDrive for Business, and that's where I got all my goodness from, the goodies, the good stuff about the roadmap, which sync is coming out when and where, the selective sync, how it works. And stick around if they recorded after the questions. There were some good questions there. And lastly, I would say the session on deep dive into groups, because obviously groups. And that's it. Thank you again for letting me join. Did I forget anything?
How does everybody get in contact with you or follow what you're doing?
Oh, yes, of course. So the best way where I'm always on is obviously Twitter at BNiaulin, which is NIAULIN. But you can find me, if you look at the ShareGate blog, it's going to be probably my blog post there. And then at the bottom, you have contact us, and it'll get to me. If you want to follow through by email, I'd be more than happy to answer by email. And yeah, again, thank you very, very much.
Yeah, no problems. Like I said, I will point users. We spoke with Benjamin's mentioning about how to get into SharePoint. I think one of your most recent posts here is how do I learn more about SharePoint, different SharePoint topics. So you've got a great blog post here with a whole lot of links and that. So I'll put that in the notes and refer people to it. Again, certainly point people towards all the stuff you do right at ShareGate. Very, very helpful. Some great videos on the groups and, you know, using SharePoint. And again, I'll again point people to ShareGate as a great option to do the migration to make it easy as drag and drop. Is that the right way to say it?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, no problems. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody. And I thank Benjamin for his time. Obviously, time zones and all that sort of stuff. It's great to get that information, that feedback from someone who was live at Ignite, and also the experience and some pointers on getting into the SharePoint migration. For those of you who want to follow my stuff, you'll find me at ciaops.com, or the Twitter is at DirectorCIA. Please feel free to contact me directly, send any emails, questions, queries, updates or suggestions for the show. But with that, I'll draw the show to a close and thank everybody again for listening to the Need to Know podcast. You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint Online and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.